Like so many of you, we battle depression through life's ups and downs.
Music has always been the one thing we could rely on to get us through the tough times we all face.
Follow us on our journey as we discuss the healing power of music, share our stories through songs and lyrics,
interview musicians and other artists,
break down genres,
deep dive into band biographies,
and much, much more.
This is the Woodward Fail
Music Speaks Podcast
with Blake Mosley,
James Todd,
and Amanda Dolan. Hey guys, this is Amanda Dolan, and welcome back to the When Words Fail Music Speak podcast, where we fight depression with the power of music. And today, I'm here with the infamous James Cox, as well as Tom Burley. Tom Burley was born in February in Los Angeles, California. He served in the Navy from 1991 to 2002. And in the Navy, he began working on developing his songwriting skills, having always been a natural singer and lover of all music. He recently put together an album of original work titled D3, Dents, Dings, and Demons, and was able to get it recorded at the famous Hilltop Recording Studio in Nashville, Tennessee, and at Fenton Records in Sparta, Michigan. That was released in February of 2023. So, I just realized that was on your birthday, too. On a big birthday. I'm not going to say which one. I'll let you tell which one if you want. But but there are fives in that birthday.
Yeah. There are two fives.
So.
Yeah, I can start, put it this way, I can start a campfire on my birthday cake.
There's Ryan.
Hey, we're...
That'd be great.
I mean,
I break a few fire codes.
Three decades of birth years represented here in this,
sure,
this virtual room. So thanks so much, Tom, for being here with us.
Oh, you're so welcome. Thank you for having me,
to have you.
James.
Yeah. So I was on your website, and then I saw that you were a member of the Flying Gypsies, which is a Navy air and jet squad, right?
Yeah, VF-32, the Fighting Gypsies. My first outfit when I joined the Navy was in a fighter. Are you guys familiar with the F-14 and Top Gun, the movie?
Yeah.
My first outfit was just that, the F-14.
Right.
And VF-32 was my first squadron. Yeah. I was with them for 5 years.
Yeah, because my dad is a retired colonel in the Air Force for 30 years. He retired.
Air Force, right on.
Air Force, yeah.
Which, keep going, James.
And he had a friend that flew jets, you know.
Oh, did he? Like, right on, yeah.
And I can't imagine actually flying one, because I looked them up on YouTube, and it doesn't seem that y'all have a lot of room to actually move around in the jet. Is that true?
Yeah, when I sit in the F-14, I would have never made it as a pilot because my legs actually go underneath the canopy. Now, it pulls underneath the openings for your legs in the cockpit. You know, you have the stick, and then you have the openings for your legs for the rudder pedals. And my knees actually protrude way past that mark. And there's an apparatus on the ejection seat that pulls your heels back, but it doesn't pull your knees back. So the first time I sat in there, I was like, oh yeah, there's, and to answer your question, there's not a lot of room in there at all.
Right.
No.
Yeah. I've always wanted I've always wanted to see if I can actually, cause, I guess the Air Force or whoever invites like very famous people to write in one, cause I know Bill involved in, you know, and I've always wanted to get in the gym and fly around, but I don't know if that's possible, you know, even though my dad's a colonel, I don't think he could swing it, you know?
Well, not to paint the skies blue or anything, but I've got a couple songs that are gonna be the videos are gonna be done on an aircraft carrier if I can pull it off.
Oh, cool!
Nice.
So if I could work something like that in, it's always neat to get people in airplanes and jets and everything that want to go in them. So yeah, you're a hot commodity now, James.
That's a great thing. Yeah. Because when you look at like Top Gun and Maverick, you always want to be like, I want to be one of those guys, you know. But then I was thinking to myself, there's a mortar.
Then I think of Goose.
But, yeah, with exception of Goose, of course, you know. But then I think that, you know, there's a mortar under my butt that can go off at any time, you know, because
you're correct.
Eject, there's a mortar, you know. I'm not too fond of that, but I would love to go up in the air and eject one day for sure. You know, I'm not sure if Amanda has that same dream of mine, but yeah.
No, not so much. But one of the things that I always have found interesting is that, and I'm going to say it this way, but it's not really true. Like, the largest Air Force in the world is the United States Navy. Like, the largest, right?
It's
like group
the second,
of planes.
Yeah, the Navy.
The second now.
Yeah, the second largest Navy, the second largest Air Force on the planet is the United States Navy. The largest Air Force on the planet is the United States Air Force.
I thought that I thought the Navy had more.
I think they got more ships.
Planes.
We're the largest as far as a carrier group. We own the whole planet. We go where we want. We can cover it all.
But it's really it is kind of cool, because if you think about it, like the aircraft carriers, without those as kind of stopping points.
Yeah,
we can't get all the way across.
Yeah, you can't. It's a 2-week blast over there when we leave out of Norfolk. It's 2 weeks. It's called Translant. Getting over there, and we'll usually hit a storm on the way back, but it's a pretty boring ride. The planes don't fly because we're in blue water. I don't want to divulge too much, but let's just say that there's times and everything where there's nothing left to work on. You start reading books, getting bored, start doing some running and everything, but beautiful ocean. The ocean, actually, when you get out past a certain mark, about 25 miles and everything, it turns like a cobalt blue color.
Right.
Yeah. The pictures of the ocean doesn't do it justice until you get out there and see it.
Yeah. Oh, I bet, you know, and I totally understand about keep your secrets, because my dad can't tell us nothing.
Well, I don't know. I mean, this is, you know, back when I was in, they didn't have information, and the aircraft I worked on, the F-14, is obsolete now and stuff. And not that I knew anything about it, about the radar or anything, to get myself in trouble anyway.
Right, yeah, because every time we ask my dad, what did he do? He's just like, well, I can tell you, but I'm going to have to kill you. And I'm like, I don't want to. Nope, it's fine. You keep your information over there. So, you know?
My my boyfriend, he is retired Army, and he had at one point when he was, you know, active duty, he had top secret clearance. And so my kids joke that, like, oh, you must be a spy. He was like, I don't think you understand. Like, I didn't know the things. I was just vetted to have a gun next to the people that knew the things.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, that makes sense.
Great.
But we've got, thank you for your service, because it is not easy. It's not an easy life being in the military for any length of time.
No, it shouldn't. You're right. You're right. You're always meeting new friends and it's hard.
So I'm like, you're the title D3, Dents, Dings, and Demons. When I read that, I think, like, those are the things that make us interesting, right? Like the scars, almost.
Yes. Yep. That's it. That's right on the nose too. Absolutely on the nose, Amanda.
Nice.
So that's where it came from. Just that.
Yeah.
Living life.
Yeah. The trials and tribulations that I've had, in my relationships, careers, growing up. And then it just kind of rang true that everybody's got their own. And I knew when, I came up with I was just being flippant one day about myself, going, man, I've been through some dents, dings, and demons. I've been through some dents and dings, and I sure got some demons. And just like that, boom, I had the title for the song. And then after that, it was, you know, because I was just being a smartass, and some of my titles have come out just from being just being flippant on my own self, but, you know, taking diggers on my own self, you know, kind of like what I've been through, you know, because that's how in the service we got through what we got through, was just being a smartass to your own self. You can't you know, making fun of yourself. So that's where Dense Things and Demons came from. And then I just started patchworking my life around it for the lyrics. My co-writer on that, Wright McCarger, was magnificent in some of the turn of phrases that he lent to that song. No rhyme, no reason, or something like that in that song. That was his one of his contributions, but he's been a huge a co-writer in several of the songs on that album. I just wanted to mention Get Right out there for sure.
So let me go all the way back to your childhood. Can you remember the first time ever you've heard music? Like, ever?
The very first time? No, I couldn't lay money on when it was the first time. But I know what song it was.
Okay.
I just don't know when. It was Karen Carpenter, Why Do Birds?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So, I don't know if that's the name of the song. Yeah. And then when I seen her, you know, and I seen her on TV, you know, I was at that age, you know, I was always girl crazy anyway. All, you know, give me a pretty smile and some bright eyes and I'm hooked.
There you go.
So when I saw Karen Carpenter, I just automatically fell in love. Yeah. And then the music. But to answer your question in a long way, sorry.
No, it's fine. Answer it however you want to. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, you said that you kind of found songwriting when you were in the Navy. Excuse me. So was it those like long nights or long, you know, just where there wasn't much going on and there was the waiting? Is that where you started writing, getting feelings out? Or
no, actually, the songwriting started in 2008. I actually got out of the service in 2002. Yeah, so it started in 2008.
I'm curious, what, like 2008? I mean, you were...
Oh, well,
you were almost 40, or you were 40, I guess.
Yeah,
right.
42, I think. Don't ask me to do the math. Yeah, I went through a separation that prior August. This was in December when I wrote Cold Winter Air. And I was just having a little emotional outbreak. And I went storming off down the road, and it was so cold outside that if you inhale too sharply, your nostrils would stay closed. That's how cold it was. And I was just mad. The same cold winter air literally is what kept going through my head. The lyrics almost verbatim. And I didn't realize it till I was halfway back from walking almost 3 miles. With just a light jacket on. I was just mad. I stormed out of the house and stuff. Long story short, it's in the book. But and on the way back, I was running, just about running, as slippery as it was, so I was running as fast as I could. And got back and just started writing down Cold Winter Air. And it wasn't to write it down as a song per se. It was just writing it down because it was so persistent in my head. You know, I got a nice taste of ADHD about me. So, you know, I just started writing it down, and then a melody came for it. You know, then I ended up having the melody came to the song and stuff, and boom, and then years later, I was able to record it. So Cold Winter Air is literally the first song I ever wrote, the first one I ever professionally recorded.
So cool. So and it really that, just that came from a broken heart.
Yeah, my wife and I had just separated that previous August, and I'd already dated, you know, trying to see if I was ready or whatever. I wasn't. Some other songs came out after that, like Another Warm Summer Night. That's about, you know, dating too soon, finding out that, you know, you're still in love with the other one. You know, you're holding one, but you're in love with the other one. You know, well, ooh, that's a good line.
Write it down.
That's songwriting for you. Oh, man. But, you know, some other songs after Cold Winter Air, they started just tumbling out after Cold Winter Air. It's like I opened a gang valve or some type of faucet, but the songs just came. Now I've got hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of songs now just waiting for just to go through the grist mill of recording. You know, getting the demos, sending down, get the music, and then recording them. You know, I pretty much got a production line now of my songs, except for the cover tunes. Cover tunes are easy, but the ones I'm writing, obviously they take a little bit more work for known reason, you know, for obvious reasons.
Yeah. And you have your own recording label, right?
Yeah, Toxic Country Records.
Yeah, I'm good because I always got asked about that because a lot of people now are going to their own record labels, you know, starting their own record labels, go to indie labels. And I wanted to ask you about how did you come up with the name, of course, because I see your logo and it's based off of it's based off of a picture that I'm looking at of gas masks, you know, and I wanted to ask you where did you get the idea from starting your own label to what all goes into like creating your own label.
Yeah, good question, James. Right on. As far as creating your own label, you can just put it out there as an LLC.
Okay.
You know, that's pretty much the easiest part there. Just filing LLC. It's like a business.
Yeah.
You know, it's your label. Now you have to decide, you know, how you work. If you're going to go get your talent, how you're going to bring your talent through to recording. You know, how are you going to finish? Well, from the beginning, you know, you meet them, you groom them, you see if this is something they want to do. I haven't brought anything through yet. Okay. I haven't brought any clients through yet. Well, it's like anything. You bring in raw talent, you hammer and forge them, let them be what they are and stuff, the best they can be, support them, and then you see what comes out the other end. Yeah. But it's just filing some LLC paperwork. I haven't done it yet because I'm not to that point where I need to. You know, right. I've got the page up and stuff, my music up there, and a little merch.
Right.
But as far as that's concerned, that's it. You know, as far as I've gotten with it, the logo was a fun story. That came together. The gas mask, that's a Mark V. Yes. Biological, radiological, chemical, gas, Mark V gas mask for us. We have different levels on the aircraft carrier of certain safety guidelines that they'll call out, and certain guidelines we have to wear certain protective equipment depending on what level's called out, and the gas mask fits into a couple of them.
Right. Okay.
After getting MOP level one, I think MOP would just carry it. And after that, we have to start wearing it for prolonged periods. And so, and this is all stuff you can find out on. This isn't anything secret or anything. You find all this stuff on YouTube nowadays.
Right, right.
and then the skull, that's after you're on the flight deck all day for 12, 18 hours, that's what you look like and feel like.
Just eye sockets. You look and feel like death, right? It's like, oh my God, I got to get out of here. Yeah.
Yeah. You've been huffing jet fumes all day and stuff. You get a little loopy.
Yeah.
And then the hat is actually my, the Gypsy's logo. That's the line there, the crest.
Right.
Oh, cool.
Nice. So,
yeah.
So three things in one. I love it. I love it. So do you have any of those cool mixer boards yet for your studio, or are you still trying to get in like LLC first before anything else?
Yeah, mine's, I don't know. You know, there's two avenues. I don't know. It depends on how big I do break out commercially, or if this just turns into being my my one big dream. Yeah. You know, I'm in my. But if the best case scenario, I would have I would actually take my find a local recording studio and take my talent there.
Yeah.
And have them recorded. If things go on a big scale, I would just have my own engineering studio, and then hire my own engineer,
right?
Which I already know two of them right now. I'd love to have them both working for me. Well, they already do. I already have them do work for me and stuff.
Oh, well, to be easy relationship then, huh?
Yeah. I can't say enough about my engineers, my recording engineers. I really can't.
I think so many people think that like Well, I can sing and I can play guitar, so I can record an album, which you can, especially now everything that's out there. But I think there's so much more nuance to good recording.
Yeah, actually, you're right. Yeah, actually, there's less time actually doing the singing and the writing than there is all the other stuff. It's like a honeybee. You know, you do all that flying around for just your whole life, and all you have is just this little bit of honey that you've made.
Right, exactly.
And I'm totally going to quote Taylor Swift right now, sort of. But like Charlie Puth, who on TikTok, he will show like how he uses his computer, I guess, but mixes, you know, things together. Which is fascinating to watch, like how the layers and, you know, finding unique sounds to be part of the music, because I think that music is more than just an instrument. It's, you know, you can find it everywhere. So you mentioned that, why did I just forget her name? Carpenter. I totally lost her first name. Oh, it'll come to me in a minute. Karen, thank you.
Carpenter, yeah.
You said that she was the, you know, one of the first songs that you remember listening to. What are like other musicians that just, you know, they resonate with you so much, or they?
Let's see. I think what I started off singing was Kenny Rogers. Johnny Lee was huge when he came out. I was about 10 when Urban Cowboy came out, or 11. All the outlaw country, Waylon, Willie, Chris Christopherson, all of them, Johnny Paycheck, David Allen Coe, The Man in Black, The Possum, Buck Owens, Hee Haw.
Possum.
Yeah, I couldn't wait for Hee Haw to come on. I had to go through Lawrence Welk, or it was after. Yeah. It was Hee Haw, then Lawrence Welk. Yeah, and then as soon as Lawrence Welk, we went out back up into the hills like Wild Children and stuff. But I couldn't wait to come down and see those girls. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Who doesn't want to be a farm boy when you got kids like that laying around? I tell you what.
And was this when you were, did you live in LA like through your childhood, or?
No, just
did
born
you move
there.
Around? Okay.
Moved around a lot, Amanda. Moved around a lot. And that's why I actually had to do a book about my sorry self, just because I did move around in such a short period of time, and then joined the Navy in my early teen or my early 20s didn't help any. But I was just born in LA, lived there for just a short period of time until I was taken back to Michigan.
And that's where you are now. Is that right?
Yeah, that's where I'm at now, but I've been back and forth a lot from between my childhood and now.
Yeah. So you mentioned that you're writing a book. So I would love it if you would share a little bit about the book you're writing and what inspired that.
Sure. I have a wonderful, my ghostwriter, Joanne Broder, bless her heart. She does the heavy lifting. I've done the heavy living, I like to say. just because when I do meet people my whole life, because of what I was through, a real tough childhood, I'll just be blunt and then I'll go from there. When I was 8 years old, my mother brutally stabbed my adopted father to death. So there was a lot of moving back and forth. I actually was sent back to live with her when she got out of prison. So there's a lot of stuff in the book that'll paint out how I made it, how I did it, how bad it got, you know, eating out of dumpsters the whole nine yards. But the reason I did the book is just for that reason. Since that happened, my whole life there's been, you know, when you meet somebody, whether it's a guy eating his lunch and everything at a bar, or some girl on a, you know, that you meet or whatever, eventually that's going to come to, you know, and it has its own connotations either way, in a lot of different ways. So as I got older, I finally got to the point where it's like, man, if I could just, you know, I had to work through therapy with this a lot, to try to figure out. I didn't want to lie to people. I didn't want to hide, you know, what I'd been through, but I didn't want to ruin anybody, be a wet blanket on anybody's parade. Because for years, I'd tell people, you know, my parents were killed in a car wreck or whatever and stuff. But after a while, when you're with somebody for a while, they can tell you're lying. And they pry it out of you. Well, now you didn't tell them and it's too late. So you can get bit. To answer the question, the reason I did a book is just when I meet people before going into the weeds, I can just give them the book. You know, it's like it's only so many pages and everything. Read it, and then that way it'll make sense to you instead of me trying to, you know, because it really it kind of unravels, like when you pull a little thread on a sweater, the whole damn thing comes undone. There's no really way to nip it, because the questions start flowing, or people want to know more and more, and then they're getting more confused because now they're entrapped and they can't, you know, they're taking the ride with me. And it was a hell of a ride just with me.
And I mean, James knows this. I work with almost exclusively women, but some men as well, with complex post-traumatic stress disorder.
Yeah,
so lots
no
of people
kidding.
with childhood trauma. And I think many of my clients have not wanted to share their stories with potential partners and even friends. Because like you said, they don't want to be the wet blanket, but also they don't want to bring people down. They don't want people to feel sorry for them, right? Like all of those things. And then there's the re-traumatizing when you're telling the hard stories. I know you said you've done therapy, and like therapy, God bless therapy.
Yeah. Thank goodness. No, the roadmap.
It's, you know, it's hard to go through all of that and to come out on the other side, period, is always impressive to me. And I have one of my clients that she's like, I'm tired of being like people telling me I'm strong. I'm done being strong. And we joked, I was like, I love it when people tell me I'm strong at the gym. But not so much like in my everyday life, right? Like, because it can be a lot. Like, you can be just done with it. And I love that idea of just, here's my story. Now you know, I don't have to tell you, you know.
Yeah, I would have loved to just had a mom and dad, you know. You know, you grow up in a little small town, you get a job at a factory, you meet your sweetheart, you have two kids, they have grandchildren, you live to your 72, you die of a heart attack, they come bury your sorry ass, the end, you know?
Right. Sounds like a great
life. Kind of not the white fence necessarily, but just the cookie cutter, just the basics, just the basics, man, you know? But other things I was destined for other things.
Yeah. So, let me ask you this about going back to music. I was with my mom the other day because I had a funeral to go to. Amanda knows this. And we were watching some kind of music television stuff, you know. And we heard this god-awful country music. I can't remember the name and the artist. But she's like, country music is not country music anymore. It's all going away from the real, like, story writing and this and that. Do you agree that country music is going away from the stories and just focusing on other stuff that doesn't need to be, you know, mentioned at all?
Wow, I can't believe the great questions. It's funny that you asked me that question because I'm a storyteller.
Right.
I'm a balladeer. I'm a little bit biased, but one of the greatest things that always got me were the heartfelt songs was the story to it. You know, is there a happy ending? Like a good song is kind of like a movie, you know, it's like, you don't want nobody to die. You want the dog to live and you want a happy ending. They right. fall in love right off into the sunset. And boy, let me tell you, country is just the opposite. You know, that's why everybody ends up going to country when they're all tore up from the floor up.
Right.
But yeah,
exactly.
Prison and a train and your mom dying, right? Yeah. In your truck.
Talk about the most depressive individuals, and all we want to do is get around and write, sing songs and everything and blow off our 44s once every weekend.
Yeah, exactly.
At a Target with a good background, by the way. Just get some fire and safety in there. Yeah. But yeah, I would agree with that. I'd say that's a fair, and I have a good reason why. Your imagination can only take you so far. And I only mean that, is the fact that the more experience you've had, i.e. that come only with age, the better songwriter and storyteller you're going to be, especially if you are a balladeer storyteller. So when you're young and everything, you might be able to use imagination, but eventually you're pulling from just that. You're pulling from a lack of experience, and that'll show up in your songwriting. You can't hide it.
Right. Yeah.
You can't hide from it. One thing a songwriter can't hide from is his lyrics or her lyrics.
Right.
You can hide from the melody, you can hide from anything else, but you can't hide from your own lyrics. And they will tell on you.
Right. I agree with that. Go ahead, Amanda.
You agree, Jim? Oh, okay. I'm definitely one of those, like, songs. I sometimes make my own meaning out of whatever the song is. You know, like, I hear it, and I'm like, I don't know what the songwriter meant, but this is how it speaks to me.
Oh, good for you. Yeah. Good for you, Amanda.
So I love hearing, like you said, stories, but those, like, the songs that, like, hit you in the feels, whether it's the happy or the sad or the feeling alone.
Yeah.
Love stories. I mean, all of those. Because you can have a whole love story written in a song if,
the
songwriter does it the right way, if you will. One of my favorite singer-songwriters, and James knows this, her name is Brandi Clark. And so she grew up in Washington State, but she's in Nashville full time now. So, and I was just in Nashville a few weeks ago. And I think now, and I'd be curious, because I know you recorded in Nashville. I think of Nashville, like, yeah, it's Music City, but right, Nashville is where singer-songwriters, like songwriting, like that's where the music is made. But like LA might be where pop stars are created.
Yeah. Yeah. I like Nashville better, you know, because pop doesn't make sense anymore, you know. Pop was
the
pop.
I loved it down in Nashville.
Yeah.
It was so nice. You get down south and the honey, oh, baby, what are you doing? You darling, you need. Oh, shit, I just melt, man. My face is red the whole time I'm down there. Yeah. I'm like, man, I think I've been adopted by every woman that's seen me so far. I love it.
Yeah.
You know, Nashville, I'm all shy and shit, man. They just. It's so nice down there.
Yeah.
The hospitality and the food, bar none. I just, if I fly over Nashville, I gain 10 pounds.
Well, I might be
Nashville's a beautiful city.
I might be going to Nashville in a couple of weeks. So I'm, you know, I'm curious what are the good food places to go by?
There was too many to count when I was there. And I was just there to drop off a package. I was there three times. During my album, I'm doing the songs for me and stuff, but I just went to Nashville the one time, into Nashville to drop off a package for a person, and another time just to go to a mall to get some bling, some swag and everything for friends back home.
Right, yeah. Yeah.
So there's a lot of great, I mean, Nashville's a really
clean town, isn't it?
City.
It's clean, too.
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
It is. It's very clean. The people are
super nice.
Lovely.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's the total opposite from LA and New York. You know.
Yeah, James.
I think my experience in New York was everybody was very willing to help you. They were just kind of rude while doing it. Like it was almost, they were like, yeah, I'll help you, but like you're, find you annoying.
I'm in a hurry.
But, you know, I mean, both James and I live in Texas, which is sort of the South.
Texas! I was born there too, so yeah, I'm in Texas.
And then James is in South Carolina, so we have, and I grew up in Kentucky and Tennessee, so like we've got the South kind of represented
right
around here.
And then there's Blake, we have another co-host, Blake, and he just born here in Sumter, South Carolina.
He is Southern.
Yeah, very. Our co-host Blake, mostly he's great. You know.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's three of us. So.
He's really, really Southern. That's for sure. You know.
He's got the best accent.
Yeah.
Yeah, because we had a discussion the other day about the difference between like y'all and all y'all.
Right. Yeah.
It's like y'all is. Yeah, y'all is like two people. All y'all is three or more.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, like, all y'all, good. Let's go.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, if it, like, we're, hey, like, we're fixing to go to the store, so all y'all get ready, let's go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. So let me ask you this, Tom. So now I think 2010 and beyond, we went to the all digital stuff, you know, streaming apps, like you got Spotify, Apple Music. So how do you see the impact of streaming platforms on country music artists and their ability to connect with audiences?
Oh, tenfold. It's made a huge leaps and bounds.
Okay.
Now, kids, well, I speak of children and everything, just, you know, the more children, you know, get them on the studio,
yeah.
Get them in the studio off the streets. So yeah, anything we can do to help, you know, anybody to get into music, get their stuff heard. And that's been huge since everything's gone off digital.
Yeah.
Since we went digital. Yeah. So yeah, I'm all for it.
I personally love buying physical items because that helps the artist more than streaming now.
I think digital is where you find people.
Right.
Like you find someone on TikTok or Instagram and then you go down the rabbit hole that is, you know, their catalog and their story. And you know, I like you mentioned, like get kids, you know, off the streets and in the studio or I have kids, so I always think about this kind of stuff. You know, we've taken away a lot of the arts in schools, right?
And shop and
yeah.
All
shop.
Of, all of that.
I love shop.
You know, the things that I think allow for creativity, but also I think, and I would be curious since you're a musician and I've always believed that music is so useful when it comes to learning math and making math more fun. So I'm curious, if you've ever had that kind of experience of like, you know, you have to learn fractions and.
Using music, because there's music is math. Math is music.
That's my, exactly.
Yeah, totally.
So it's a great way to get kids interested in math because they want to play music. Right?
Yeah, sure.
So
that's a good gateway formula to get kids interested in math. Well, it behooves them anyway. If you're interested in, it's by proxy. If they're into music, that's why you kind of end up there. You end up there anyway, which is a good thing if you just get them into music because. You got to know math, like 4/4, 2/2, 4 beats on a half beat. So there is, you know, and then he gets more involved in that. So,
but even the scales and understanding, you know, the differences in the notes and then, you know, you think about even like the art, like fine art, it's also very math based. If you think about geometry when it comes to, like perspectives and things like that. And so as a mom, I always get frustrated when you take away the creative stuff because we need that. That's what makes us more interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. For our mental health.
And you have, absolutely. And you have a song about moms too.
Oh, it's a mom thing. Yeah. We just blasted that. We just released that.
Oh, yeah. It was so you said like creativity for your mental health.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel like you use your music to take care of your mental well-being?
Good question.
It's my mindfulness.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's my quiet space. I mean, I can be hit anytime with a liner or something for a song, but when I'm working on the music, whether I'm in a studio or working on a verse for a song, if I'm just holding a pencil, I'm in it. I'm kind of in that office, for lack of better words. I'm in my songwriting office as soon as I pick up a pencil, start listening to music. You know, I still listen to music for pleasure and everything, but it's I can focus really hard on it, back up. So I'm still enjoying it too and stuff. But yeah, it's a good place to be for sure.
I'm curious. You mentioned ADHD, and I have that as well. So do you ever find, though, that when, like, you're in your songwriting, you just completely lose track of time, and all of a sudden it's
like
however many hours later,
3 o'clock a.m.
Now that I've learned to harness and recognize my ADHD a little bit better, I'm a little bit more on top of it. But yeah, ADHD, that's why I play songs over and over that I like. I don't get bored. I never got bored working on aircraft. I never got bored of any factory I ever worked at, just because, you know, I could sing along while I was doing these, you know, putting these parts together or working on another, you know, another jet. Same thing I've done a million times over and over. But yeah, I'm so glad for my ADHD. I was even happier when I learned more about it and how I could harness it instead of it taking over me. I could turn, you know, put a saddle on it and ride it instead of the other way around.
Right, right.
Yeah. It's you know, James knows this because I think I mentioned it a few episodes ago, but I have time blindness, right? Like I will just completely get lost. Like I may have someplace I need to be, but I will forget to like do anything. I just get stuck. So I've started creating playlists. So I have a 10 minute, 15, 20. So like my 15 minute playlist ends with Chris Stapleton. You should probably leave.
That's great. That's the greatest thing I've ever heard.
My 20 minute playlist ends with Fast Car.
Right. Yeah.
But Tracy Chapman, because I'm old school.
I think it's safe to say we're all old school here. I mean, come on now, right?
Yeah, I'm 57. Yeah.
I'm 44, so, you know, and the man is right behind me, so yeah. So we're all in the same category, so yeah.
Yes.
Right
so, on, James.
Yeah.
But I definitely like the, you know, having music that, one, I enjoy, and it has to be the same order every time, because it's like there's something in my brain, right, that's like, okay, that is the third of five songs, so I've got two songs left till I have to work out.
Right, yeah.
Which is a good working at NASA or Apollo, running fingers over your head over and over. Yeah.
Oh, you know, you say that, and I was on the treadmill today at the gym, and I was like, okay, I wanted to do this many miles, so that means that, like, at this, like, pace, it's this many minutes, and so that means that like one tenth is this many minutes and this many seconds, and that's the way my brain
see,
works.
Math equals sure music equals math.
I'm nuts, nah. But
scientific brain.
Yeah, there you go.
It's
there you go.
Yeah.
I don't know. Hyper focus brain maybe.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hyper focus.
So, you know, I know that, and I know James too. We love live music, and they're going to be really great, you know, memorable experiences.
Yes.
You know, at live music. Like, I will never forget my first concert with my parents at Peter, Paul, and Mary. But what's your favorite, most memorable experience from some sort of live concert or festival that you've been to?
Oh, man. When I went to see it was 38 Special.
Great band.
Yeah, it was 38 Special, Marshall Tucker Band.
Another great band.
Hank Williams Jr. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was back when I was in the service then. That would have been in '98 probably, 2000, okay. Or I mean not 2000, but 1998. It was in the amphitheater there behind my house in Virginia Beach, Virginia and stuff, where they put a an amphitheater and a dugout amphitheater and stuff, so you could hear the concerts at night.
Right.
It was only like maybe a mile from the house.
Well, that's terrible. I mean, you gotta be loud enough to drive a mile, you know, mile out.
Yeah, so it was dangerous.
Yeah, Great show. Yeah, because I've always wanted to see Hank Williams Jr. But I think that Hank Williams III would be an awesome show to go see, too. Because, you know, his son plays rock music or country music, but I could be wrong. I think he plays country music, yeah. Yeah, but that would be some yeah, because I'm going to go see GWAR within a couple weeks now. And live shows are always fantastic to go to, you know.
So
we have two questions for you remaining, and I got to ask you this. So what advice would you give other aspiring country music artists trying to break into the industry? Like, what have you been through that you tell them not to do? You know, is there anything that you've been...
Don't give up.
Yes.
And go outside. Go outside your circle. As your work progresses, go to your peers. Don't go to your friends.
That's right.
Look for total strangers to try to share your work with.
Okay.
And just don't give up. Don't worry about what the other guy's doing. No matter what, just put out the best stuff you can put out. Don't worry about any auto-tuning or whatever knuckleheads trying some new gimmick or whatever. Gimmicks aren't talent. Talent is talent.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
And I strongly agree with you on find strangers to tell you how they feel about your music, because friends will always say, oh, yeah, it's the greatest thing on earth, you know, and that those are, I mean, they're your friends, they're supposed to say that, you know, but I think that you're right, if you go to total strangers, tell me what you think, no or yes, and they'll tell you 100% what they think, because they don't know you, you know.
Yeah, and I've got a couple friends that will, they're more than friends, I've known them my whole life and everything, but just the average day, you know, work associate and stuff, you know, you want to make sure, throw your line way the hell away from the boat, see what they think of your bait.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. I like that.
You want to go?
I always ask this question. This is always my question. So we talk about mental health a lot here. And one of the things that, like, I don't think a lot of musicians, vocalists talk about is their vocal health and what they do to protect their voice, because that's their moneymaker, right? I mean, that's, so what do you do to take care of your voice, your vocal health?
I absolutely, absolutely, absolutely stay away from secondhand cigarette smoke.
Okay.
And cigarettes. People that smoke, any kind of, I won't play or sing, I won't even hang out. My friends come over, my closest friend, I call her sis, she's just a friend of mine, I call her sister. She comes over, I open a window, she either sits by the window or smokes outside, and she respects that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's probably my big one. And, just stay healthy, wash your hands, you know. Wash your hands once in a while.
Is there
so just generally good advice.
Only pick your own nose, don't go venture.
No, that's not. So is there any like liquids that's good for your throat? Because I heard that pineapple juice is like perfect for the throat. Water, of course.
You know what? Well, I don't want to give this, man. I don't know if I want to give this away. It's in an article.
Okay.
Man, I guess I give it away. I read it in an article.
I can bleep it out.
I read it in an interview. Dolly Parton eats Lay's potato chips before she performs.
Really?
Guess what I do before I go into a studio? I eat Lay's potato chips.
Nice.
I hope it's been sued now.
Right.
Or end up with a whole ton of
bag of potato chips. I would love that if we got sponsored by them. They're great.
There's a semi of Lay's potato chips at my back door now.
That's right.
Right there.
Let me just tell you that over the weekend, my daughter and I went to the theater to watch the 35th anniversary of Steel Magnolias, in the theater on the big screen.
Nice.
Dolly Parton looks exactly the same as she did 35 years ago.
Yeah, she
does. Unbelievable. she is
amazing.
She's beautiful, but she's an incredibly talented songwriter as well. I mean, we've talked about that here.
Oh,
and
wait
she's.
A minute. It was Dolly Parton's the first song, Jolene. It was Jolene was the first song I'd ever heard. It wasn't Karen Carpenter.
Oh, okay. Oh, so what Dolly?
Yes.
No, okay, nice.
Yes. Yeah, I had them backwards.
Oh, okay.
I've got them all messed
both
up.
Both great songs.
But hey, Amanda.
No, and I, you know, one of my favorite things, I think it was, who was she with? Was it Aretha Franklin or Diana? No. Oh, my gosh. Wow.
Damn, Amanda.
Was she, but she was talking about, like, she used her acrylic nails to.
Yeah.
Like, you know, to make a.
Yeah. One of those.
Like, oh, like a washboard.
That she would,
a washboard.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like so that when she was writing music, she would use, you know, her nails to create, like, a, you
that's
know, a
genius.
Rhythm.
That's, talk about making
she's
it
just,
work.
Amen.
Yeah.
Got to make something
I
work.
I love her. Yeah. She just makes me happy. And she just doesn't take things too seriously. And she just, I mean, she takes music very seriously. She takes literacy very seriously. But, like, generally life, she just has fun.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, she's been a stalwart. She's been the stalwart of female country music and everything her whole life. I mean, she never got into any trouble. She always kind of, you know, kept it on the straight and narrow and just a sweetheart through and through.
Yeah, true. I agree.
And yeah. I mean, so. Yeah, she's just all the things. She's funny. She's beautiful. She's, you know, she wants to make the world a better place. I truly, genuinely believe that about her.
Right.
If you have James always.
If you have time for two more questions, okay, nice, thank you.
Sure.
Okay, Amanda doesn't know this, but I've been asking artists this question: Who is your top four artists of all time? Kind of like a Mount Rushmore. If you had to choose which ones go on a Mount Rushmore, which one would you pick?
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It's hard, I know.
It's hard.
Yeah.
Man.
So, Mr. Jeff, one of our friends, says I should ask this question from now on. I mean, so, yeah.
I would say number one would be Hank Williams Jr., Waylon Jennings, Johnny Cash, and Kenny Rogers.
Nice. Those are all great picks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're all great picks. I mean, I love Kenny Rogers. Yeah. I'm so sad that he passed. Because, well, you probably noticed, but he was in a rock band called First Edition.
Yeah, he was.
And then he moved over to country. I was like, what the hell? How great is that, you know?
I remember singing that, too, and stuff. And then when I found out I was a young kid and everything, he was from a rock band, and I'm like, why is everybody coming over to country? And then Conway Twitty found out Conway Twitty did the same thing. Went from rock over to country.
Did he?
When your heart's broken that bad, you come. Everybody ends up over in country.
Hey, man, that's the best. That's the best category to come from country music, man.
Yeah. Even when we get older, we're all dense things and demons anyway.
There you go. There you go.
Exactly. Yeah. That's There's right. But those are the things that make us interesting.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Exactly.
Unique.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're absolutely right, Amanda.
And they're great stories too.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's always, you know, when you see a scar on someone, there's always the. I was talking to a friend about this the other day. Like, you know, what's your cool scar story? You know, like you've got, you know, someone sees a scar on you and they're like, "Well, how did you get that?"
Oh.
And so, like, mine's covered up right now, but I don't even know if you can.
Is it like a?
It's hard to see. I got burned right here.
Ooh.
But it's my funny story because I was at a church mission trip and I was taking a pan of biscuits out of the oven. I was in charge of the kitchen. And I'm short. And this was a big commercial oven. And so, you know, I think it was right about here.
Yeah.
And so I'm pulling this out and it starts to slip. And what do I do? Because I don't want to waste it. As I like put my chest out to catch the...
Yep. Oh,
450 degree can of, you know, biscuits.
Yeah.
So I got a lovely third degree burn there, but I did not lose a single biscuit.
Save the biscuits.
My claim to fame.
Saving the biscuits. I love it. I love it.
Sure. You get a raise out of the biscuits, Ray. Right?
There you go.
Save the biscuits, James.
Right, right.
Yes. Yeah. So, I, you know, like you said, the dents and the dings, like that's where the interesting stuff is.
It is. That's where it is. That's where we're made. That's where we make our bones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I do love that title, that album title.
Yeah.
Thanks, Amanda.
It's great. So if you thought that the last question, the Mount Rushmore, was hard, this is going to be even tougher.
Okay? What do you got, James?
You ready?
What do you got?
All right. So so if you could name an album, an artist, or a song that you can listen to by yourself, but you can't tell me or Amanda or anybody else how it makes you feel, which one would it be? Another hard question from James Cox, y'all.
The album would be Journey's Greatest Hits.
Okay.
Yeah, Don't Stop Believing.
Great, right? Yes. Yeah.
Look, I did, James. I just got a song and an artist at the same time. I know nothing about music. They just have me here.
We need to put that in the books. We need to put this in the books, y'all. And she did it live.
I'm just here at NASA. I don't know anything about rockets. I just work here.
Right? Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
No, the joke is like I don't know anything. I know no like music trivia. I couldn't tell you the name of songs, but I will sing. I know the lyrics.
She knows the words.
I know all the words. I couldn't tell you who sings it. I will even annoy the heck out of my kids because the song will come on, and it's usually in the car. A song will come on, and I'll look over at my kid, whichever one's in the front seat, and I will
embarrass
them. Speak to them the first line of the song,
and they're like,
and
"What?"
Then, you know,
oh, wait a minute!
They give me this look, and they're like, "Oh my God, you're so annoying!" But you know,
no kidding,
that's
Amanda.
My job.
No, that's okay. That's all right.
You know, it's my job to annoy my kids.
If you can remember the words and everything, we don't care. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Well, and that's, you know, I love to put on a random kind of station. And that's where I start to find some like artists that I really have grown to love.
I think the words means a lot more than the artist's name, you know, which is fair, you know, because we don't remember, just like Amanda. Like sometimes
I can't even remember
artist names, but I love the words and the music, you know.
Yeah, that's so true too, James. I can't, you know, me trying to pull out some of these my favorite artists. It's like I could sing a bunch of songs of them and stuff, but
right.
Coming to the names, yeah, that's, I get that.
Yeah, cool.
Well, and like, you know, I mentioned, and I always, Brandi Clark is like my go-to. I just love her, like her writing. And she didn't sing for a long time. She just wrote for other musicians. But there are so many of, how I found her is, I don't think I've told this story to James. I was at a PTA meeting, and one of my friends came in and she was like, you have to hear this song. And I'm like, okay, we got a few minutes. Like we're sitting in the school library, but there's no kids around. I'm like, we got a few minutes before the principal gets here.
Sure.
She's like, I you can't hear it here. And I was like, what? And she's like, I'll send it to you when I get home. Like I'll send you a link. And she did. And not giving, there's no reason why she would have sent this song particular to me, but it's called Get High. And it's like, cause the hook is like, she hates her job, loves her kids, tired of the same old list of things to do. And the to-dos have all been done. She sits down at the kitchen table and smokes herself a fat one.
Yeah.
I don't know. But then like, there's other songs that she has written that just like, they speak to me for no, again, like I don't have any clue what her, like what she was thinking when she wrote some of those songs that just hit me.
Yeah.
Those are the good ones. I appreciate like the songwriting more and the words, like you all kind of mentioned, like those words, the songwriting.
Yeah.
I mean, also like if I like the music and I find it enjoyable to listen to.
Yeah, that's a big thing too.
But the words to me are, and that's what,
that's what music does to you.
I know that, like, I know James asked his last question, but I'm going to ask this. Sorry, James. Writing. So, what is harder, writing the lyrics or writing the, like, music?
Ooh.
Well, songwriting isn't hard to me at all. one just takes more time than the other is all. Usually, usually when I already have the melody. Okay. So all I have to do, once I come up with a song and we put it to a demo, which is just a real rough recording of me singing it roughly into a piano, I send it down to Nashville, and then their band down there, their house band, puts it to music, sends it back up here, and then I do the recording to it. I don't have a band yet. So on my album, those first six songs were all, the music was recorded down there, so I have to write the song, so the song would actually takes a little bit more time than actually put the music to it, because those guys down there are so good, so fast, that it's just amazing. You know, the quickest song I ever wrote was Tough Shit in 12. I wrote that in 12 Tough minutes. It still takes some less time to put the music down to a song.
Right.
Song's only 3 minutes. You know, an average song's only 3 minutes.
And isn't that kind of the beauty of the, like, time that we live in, that you can be 1,000 miles away and still create music?
Yeah, you couldn't do what I've done. Someone. Yeah, you couldn't do what I've done for the. I mean, it's still expensive to do recordings. Don't get me wrong, it can be. But it's so much easier now because you can do it on a smaller scale. You can do it in your own home now. You know, I mean, you can, there's a lot of shade tree engineers now and stuff that are coming out of the woodwork and doing some great work, you know. But you can do as much or as little as you want as far as your own music career.
Yeah. All right, Ms. Stop. I think that wraps it up for today's interview. We honestly thank you so much for coming. And I just want to give Caden a big shout out, because without him, I wouldn't have never met you. You know, me and Amanda
absolutely
would never.
Thank you so much, Caden.
Yeah, thank you, man. You're great. So, and we do invite you back anytime you want to come back. Just mention that to me. You got my Facebook thing, and we.
Okay, Jim. Yeah. Sure.
And for anybody listening. Oh, I'm sorry, Amanda, to cut you off.
No, I was going to say, do you know when your book's coming out?
Yes, we got
It should be within, I would think, a couple months.
Okay.
90 days or less. Okay.
And then you have a new album of covers coming out, too,
yes.
In the near
You got three covers.
Well, right?
Yeah, that's going to be a little bit longer. That's going to probably be a year. That'll probably be about a year out.
All right.
So keep an eye out for that, though, because.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. And for people can always go to toxiccountrymusic.com for anything you want.
And also my email, my email address, BUEHRLESYSTEM at yahoo.com.
Okay. And I see you have some awesome merchandise, right? Available at the Toxic Country Music.
We've got a few things up there, more to follow as things progress. The new songs coming out, we'll have to get new t-shirts for those. But buy all you want, or as few things as you want, whatever you see up there, if you like it.
Nice.
It all just goes towards some more music.
There you go, man. There you go. So we honestly thank you for coming on. For everybody else listening to the show, always remember, when words fail,
music speaks.
Bye, guys.